Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Coming up this weekend, the New York Mets take on the Kansas City Royals, but on Sunday afternoon, a day is coming that I'm not sure if this man ever thought the day would come, and that is the retirement of his number into the rafters at Citi Field. We're talking about the great Dwight Doc Gooden. Doc, Tiki Barber, Evan Roberts, how you doing today, pal?
Good. How you guys doing? Thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys.
Well, we appreciate you. I'm curious, was there ever a moment where you thought, I'm going to get my number retired, like while you were pitching, after your career? Did you think this day that's going to occur on Sunday was ever going to come?
Not at all. You know, as a player in the backyard, you know, playing my nephew, Gary Sheffield, you always dream about playing the major leagues one day, possibly playing in the World Series one day. But you never think about getting your number retired. You think about, you know, all the different things, playing against some of your heroes or whatever. But getting your number retired, that's something that never crossed my mind. Even during my playing days, when I was at the highs of my career, that's just something you never think about. You just think about winning the World Series, having your team win. And at the end of the year, if you're close to, you know, winning an award, you think about that. But I never actually thought about getting my number retired until once you retire, and you see a lot of guys getting their numbers retired, and fans start questioning about it or asking about it. Or the media asks you about it, it crosses your mind sometime and you wonder about it. But it never something I really thought about until some guys, like, say, when Jerry Kluzman got his number retired, I thought, maybe I have a chance. But then sometimes you start doubting yourself because of the problems I had off the field. You say, maybe I did too much off the field and that was, you know, it never happened. But once I got the call last year from Mets owner Steve Cohen, I mean, that's definitely a blessing come true.
Yeah, what do you expect on Sunday, Doc? Like, what do you – I mean, we know what the reaction is going to be. It's going to be cheering, but I'm talking about from you emotionally. Like, what do you expect?
Oh, man, I have no idea how I'm going to accept that. I'm obviously going to be overjoyed. I'm going to have my grandkids here as well as my kids. So my grandkids never seen me play. They were too young. And my 11-year-old grandson, who plays Little League Baseball in Tampa, he's going to catch the first pitch. So it's going to be very emotional. I know that. I'm just going to just soak it all in, you know, because when you're a player and you get all these accolades, you really can't enjoy it as much as you like to because it's on to the next. But with this, I get to enjoy this, and like even now with the momentum leading up to Sunday, and just take it all in and enjoy it as much as I can with my family and the fans who've been with me since day one.
If you haven't gotten tickets, people should get them. It's going to be a fun afternoon, Sunday afternoon. Doc Gooden, his number being retired at Citi Field. We're talking to him right now. I'm curious, the origin of 16. You know, for me growing up, I always associated 16 with you because I grew up in the early 90s, and it's Doc Gooden opening day. Doc Gooden, I'll leave out Tuffy Rhodes. That's a bad memory for all of us.
Oh, man. Oh, that was a tough day.
But where did 16 come from?
So, you know, at high school, I was number 5, I was number 9, and I was number 10. So those are my favorite numbers. And when I got drafted, I went to Kingsport for rookie ball, and there was a guy there named Russ Orrick. I'll never forget this guy. He had been in rookie ball for like 3 years. And he goes, I don't care if you're a bonus baby or not. They used to call it like the number one picks or the high draft picks. They used to call us bonus babies. He goes, you're not getting my number. Because I asked the equipment manager who had number 10. He said, this guy, Russ. So he didn't want to give me 10. Somebody had 5. And so I told the equipment manager, I said, give me the closest number you have to number 10 besides number 13. So I always thought 13 was a bad luck number, you know, just growing up as a kid. And he gave me 16. So the next year, I go to A-ball, which is Lynchburg. 16 is available, so I did 16 again. And so I said, well, 16 is going to be my number. Now, fast forward to 1984, I go to spring training as a non-roster player. I went number 64 with no expectations of making the club. I made the team only because of David Johnson. And I remember when I made the team, our general manager, Frank Cashin, told me if I have any problems with anybody or I need anything, just come see him. So we get to Shea Stadium to work out. First, I work out, and in my locker is a jersey hanging up with my name on the back, and it's got number 35. So I go to Charlie Samuels' office, who's the equipment manager, and I say, Charlie, can I have number 16? His exact words was, get out of here, kid. Just be happy you made the team.
Wow.
So I got out of his office, and I ran up to Frank Cashin's office. I said, Frank, I want number 16. Nobody has it, but Charlie won't give it to me. Frank came in there, made Charlie give me 16. But then I found out later, the reason Charlie didn't want to give me 16, because he was good friends with Lee Mazzilli, and Mazzilli was the last guy to wear 16 before I got 16.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
And then, in 86, when Mazzilli, we signed Mazzilli bike to us in 86, I offered 16 bike to Lee. But he said, no, that's your number now. You enjoy it. And that's really how I became.
Wow, that's a cool story.
So you offered 16 back to Lee upon his return. You didn't ask for anything? Like, there wasn't any kind of negotiation? It was just you were going to give it to him for nothing?
Well, he didn't do it back then.
It was one of those things where you offered it back to him, but you're hoping he says no.
Right.
I'm glad 16 stuck, because 35 just wouldn't have looked right.
Yeah. No, 35 didn't look right. No.
Yeah, it's too wide of a number for your frame. It wouldn't have looked right. So we were having this conversation, Doc, because the Giants in my 17 years, I think there's been three guys that have worn my number. Does it bother you when other guys wear your number? I mean, now they won't forever, but has it bothered you, I should say?
You know, that's a great question, and no knock against anybody. So last year, I was doing an autograph signing at the American Dream Mall, the mall right by the Giants.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I'm doing a sign-in, and I go by the sporting goods store, and it's got Nomo. Remember Nomo?
Yes, they are Nomo were 16.
It has Nomo 16 on a Met jersey hanging up in the store. Oh, so nothing against Nomo, but, you're like, wow, that kind of hurt a little bit. That did hurt.
I was explaining this earlier, Doc. It hurt me because I feel like with your number – and with Darryl's number, they wouldn't just hand it out to people. They would hand it out to, and I will take shots at some guys, like Alejandro de Aza. Like, no offense to him, or maybe some offense to him. He's a fourth outfielder, and they're giving him 16. Like, it's one thing when it's, okay, like Paul Laduca was a good Met.
Yeah.
He was a good, he ain't you, but he's a good Met. Okay, fine. Yeah. But to me, as a fan, it bothered me when it went to just about anybody.
I get it. I felt good when, Derek Bell, when he was there, he was 16. But Derek Bell, actually, I was on the Yankees. And Derek, we grew up in Tampa together. He's the same age as Gary Sheffield, my nephew. And so Derek Bell's mother was good friends with my sister. But when Derek went to the Mets, he actually called me and asked me, did I mind if he were 16?
Wow.
Not that he had to ask, but I felt that made me feel pretty good that he would take the time out to do that.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Okay, so coming up this Sunday, you'll be out, getting your number retired. Are you speaking? Are you going to say anything?
Yes, they will give me a chance to talk.
All right.
It's going to be great. And I always wanted this opportunity since 94, to be honest with you, when the Mets wanted to cut ties. I got suspended. And the thing was, I understood from a business standpoint that they wanted to cut ties, but I didn't want to go out on that note. I always wanted to address the fans and let them know how much I thank them and how much they meant to me and how much they always stuck by me through my ups and downs. And I showed them my appreciation to them as well. But unfortunately, I never got the opportunity to do that. And even when I retired with the Yankees in 2000, I tried to sign a one-day contract with the Mets. But I was told no. And I'm not taking a shot at the Mets or anything, but they told me I couldn't do it. And so now I get the opportunity to address the fans and let them know how much they meant to me and to share that moment with my kids and grandkids.
Oh, that's great.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That is awesome. I always, as a fan, after the departure in 94 and then going to the Yankees and having a little bit of success pitching the no-hitter, I always had this dream that they would bring you back. And when you did come back as a freaking Yankee at Shea Stadium day in July, it was weird, man, because we cheered for you. Like, I remember getting up as one of the rare times I'll ever cheer a Yankee at Shea Stadium, but it's freaking Doc Gooden coming back. Were you ever in conversations or close at ever? You mentioned the one-day contract, but was there ever a conversation with the Wilpons or Steve Phillips about coming back and actually pitching for the Mets in 2000?
Well, it was. So, definitely. So, you got to take them part of my speech. So, when the Mets were to cut ties, I signed with the Yankees, 96 and 97. After the 97 season, I call, I talk to Steve Phillips, and I'm not taking shots at Steve Phillips or nobody. He's a good friend of mine. And I asked him, I said, is there any chance I can come back to the Mets? He said, unfortunately, we don't have any room. We have our staff now. We wish you all the best. So I signed with Cleveland, went to Cleveland, 98 and 99. After 99 season, I called the Mets again. So I'd like to come back, any chance, you know, any room or whatever. He said, unfortunately, we still don't have nothing, Doc. Wish you the best. 2000, I signed with Houston. I pitched one game. I traded to Tampa. I pitched 8 games and got released. I called the Mets again. I said, I'll go to AAA. I'll do whatever it takes. I just want to finish as a Met. And I was told no. And by me living in Tampa at that time, and the Yankees having training in Tampa, George Steinbrenner called me himself and said, asked me if I still wanted to pitch. I said, yes. He said, go to spring, go over to the Miley Complex and work with Billy Connors, the late Billy Connors. And he said, if it doesn't work out, you can't work for me. So I went over there. I worked out a little bit. I threw like 2 minor league games, nothing special. One morning, the next morning, Billy called me in the office. And I'm thinking they're going to release me. And he says they need a pitcher in New York. They want you to pitch the day game at Shea Stadium. And the night game could be at Yankee Stadium. But they want you to pitch at Shea Stadium. And that's all I really wanted, was a chance to go back to Shea Stadium.
Yeah.
And I remember I was thinking to myself, I say, I'm not really ready. But I can't say I'm not ready because I'm trying to make the team. And I pitched good. I beat the Mets. And we only beat the Mets in a World Series. So
yeah,
that was kind of special. Even though I'm always going to be a Met, but that was kind of special.
Yeah, I remember that. That was quite a day, the doubleheader.
Evan's like, great story.
Yes, no, trust me, I lived the story. We're talking to Doc Gooden, his numbers being retired on Sunday. If you haven't, buy tickets, head out. It's going to be a great day. There is something about your career, and I don't know how often you've ever been asked about this, and I only uncovered this during the pandemic because I was bored, and I was just reading stats. And I went through Tony Gwynn, one of the greatest hitters of all time. Tony Gwynn has great career numbers against everybody. It's absurd. Against John Smoltz, 450. Against Greg Maddux, 380. Against any good pitcher in the history of baseball, Tony Gwynn destroys them, except for Doc Gooden. And the numbers that Tony Gwynn has against you were anemic. He was a 240 hitter against Doc Gooden. So here's my question. Well, first of all, did you know that? Like, did you know your ownage of Tony Gwynn in his career?
I only found that out, unfortunately, when Tony passed and they had those stats up like you just mentioned. That's the only way I knew, because Tony was a great hitter. And he's one of the guys that I never tried to strike out. I always tried to make him, you know, make contact, but make him hit a good pitch. Mm-hmm. But I knew I wasn't going to strike him out. Unless I got 2 strikes, I might take a shot at it. But he was a tough hitter, man, and a tough guy to strike out. But I didn't know his stats off me until when he passed away. And like you just mentioned, they ran some stats on the board, and that's when I figured it out.
Do you think that that's why you had success against him, that maybe you had just a different – because you knew. I mean, Tony Gwynn would never strike out. But do you attribute that to how you were able – because I think that's one of the most – I think it's actually one of the most impressive accomplishments. Like, his numbers against everybody, all these all-time greats, they're awesome, 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 awesome. And you are the guy – you were the kryptonite – to Tony Gwynn. Why do you think that was the case?
I think the thing is, like, he didn't really have that many weaknesses. But a lot of times as a pitcher, you try to keep hitters off balance. And what I mean by that, you keep them uncomfortable. Not throwing at guys or trying to hurt guys, but making them move their feet. And what I mean by that, pitching high and tight, down and away, changing their eye levels, and keep them guessing. Like, Tony was the best hitters in all of baseball all the time to me, especially in my era. So a lot of times, I knew I wasn't going to strike him up. I just mixed my pitches up. Just try to keep him uncomfortable. Every other bat, I might try to knock him down a little bit. Again, not to hurt him anything, but just to keep him uncomfortable. And I think that played a major part of it.
Yeah, you know, so Doc, when you were pitching, I was in Roanoke, Virginia. I mean, I was more of a Braves fan than anything, simply because they were on TV all the time. Yes. So I saw you a lot. And the thing that, like, sticks in my mind about you is like your Gumby arms, right? There's no bone. It's just all like muscle and like and ligament and just moves. Mm. And you really never had injuries. And I bring that up because we're seeing an epidemic happen in baseball where starting pitching is really battling an injury bug. And Evan and I have talked about it. Some of it's because these guys are just rearing back and throwing 99 every time. It's obviously the lack of the sticky stuff and, you know, gripping the ball harder. But, you know, when I think back to you, it looked effortless. It didn't look like you were, like, trying to throw hard. I wonder if that's a lesson for some of these younger pitchers who are now lifting more, right? Their body construction is different. Like, you have all these oblique issues. Are they trying? Are they doing too much?
Oh, that's a great question. And you're right on with that. I was very lucky and very fortunate that my dad was very knowledgeable of baseball and mechanics and all that. And he taught me about pitching when I was 9 years old, about mechanics. He taught me how to throw a curveball at that age. He felt like it wasn't what you throw, it was how you throw it. He was real big on mechanics. And even when I got to the big league level, he always, after every start, I had to call my dad and we talk about pitching. And he always basically dissected my mechanics to make sure it's a T. I think now what you're saying, and it's just my opinion, like you said, guys are bigger and stronger. They lift from weights, heavy weights, which in my time, we stayed away from that. And everything's about velocity. Everything's about spin rate. And a lot of this, I blame the system. The teams are doing that because these are guys that are drafting. They're not teaching mechanics anymore. All the pitches they're throwing from like half of the windup, half from like the set position. So they're not going from a fully windup position. And everything's about velocity and spin rate. You take a guy like Greg Maddux or Tom Glavine, they probably wouldn't even get drafted if they were coming in the draft today because they didn't throw 95, 96. And that's where the game is going now. It's about power, strikeouts, and hitting home runs with the launch angle. And the game has changed so much. But I was big on mechanics. Velocity, like you said, I'll add and subtract. I knew how to add and subtract. I only had two pitches, fastball, curveball. I would change these, my curveball, my fastball, add and subtract. Well, a lot of pitches now, they're throwing less. They're throwing 4 to 5 innings, no more than 100 pitches. They're not facing the lineup 3 times around. So they're mixing out. And you can only mic out so much, and you're going to blow out. And I think that's what's happening today. And that's why you see so many injuries, in my opinion. Yeah.
I completely agree with you. So on Sunday, your number will officially be retired. You join this exclusive class of Mets who have their numbers in the rafters. And being in that class, I'm curious, who should be next? Obviously, Darryl will join you in a few months, but is there anyone else, in your opinion, in Met history who should join that exclusive company of having their number retired?
Oh man, you're putting the heat on me with that. wow, there's some guys. I mean, oh man, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. I think you know Mookie should be right there. But if I went with my that's my friend. If I go with my heart and my true gut feeling, I might say David Wright might be the next guy in line. Mm-hmm. That's just me. I'm taking a wild guess, not looking at numbers or anything. But I might have to go with David Wright.
All right, I think we'll see it. I think David will definitely get it. Doc, enjoy Sunday. I'll be in the building. Can't wait to cheer you on. We appreciate it, and congratulations,
yeah,
man.
Congrats, Doc. Good to chat with you.
You too. Thank you guys for having me, and I appreciate you guys.
You got it.
Thank you so much.
The great Dwight Gooden. Dwight Eugene Doc Gooden, better known as Doc Gooden. I'm quoting Doc the Video. I watched Doc the Video many times as a child on VHS tape.
That's great.
But he was great. So that'll be a fun day on Sunday afternoon, Mets against the Royals. You can buy some tickets, hang out. It should be a fun, fun afternoon. Weather looks like it's going to be clear. So that's going to be very, very cool. It's going to be an awesome day.
Hmm.